I have a handout. Yeah, things are getting real now. I've got a handout that Julie is going to pass out for you. Okay. So Habakkuk was a prophet who lived in Judah sometime in the late 590s to early 600 BC. He is one of the so-called minor prophets. The prophets have traditionally been divided into two categories: the minor prophets and what we might call the major prophets. There are 12 minor prophets, and they are called minor simply because their books are relatively short, especially when compared to the major prophets, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah, whose books are long. Major and minor refers to the length of the books, but not the importance of the books. In our Bibles, all the minor prophets' books are listed together. In Christian Bibles, they are the last 12 books of the Old Testament. Now, as you may know, Christian and Jewish Bibles order the books of the First Testament differently. So if you look on page 1 of the handout, you'll see that the minor prophets are in different locations in the Jewish and the Christian canons. The Jewish ordering of the books is on the left-hand side of your handout, and the Christian order is on the right-hand side. But the 12 books that make up the minor prophets are the same, and they are in the same order, and they appear all together in both of the canons. Now, in the Jewish ordering of the biblical books, there's three major divisions. There's the Torah, what we sometimes call the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Bible. Next comes the prophets, which includes not only the books that we would normally think of as prophetic, but also what we often think of as the historical books: Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings. And then finally, there's the writings, which includes the wisdom, literature, poetry, and books like Ruth, Esther, and Daniel. Now, if we zoom in on the Jewish category of the prophets, the prophetic books are divided between former prophets, consisting of Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings, and the latter prophets, consisting of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the minor prophets. Now, the reason the book arrangement matters is that the categorization gives us hints about how to read and interpret the Bible. The categorizing of former and latter suggests that we have to read these books together. The former prophets tell us what happened. That's why Christians tend to think of them as historical books. The latter prophets record how the prophets responded to what happened. Now, when reading prophetic literature, I've often wondered how I'm supposed to fit all of these books into the history of Israel and what exactly the prophets were responding to. So on the back of your handout, you'll see a chart that I came across in my research that shows where the prophetic books fit into the history of the monarchy of Israel. So the chart lists all of the kings of Israel and Judah and the prophets who prophesied during their reigns. So if you were reading through Samuel, Kings, or Chronicles, you could check the list and see if we have writings from any prophets who prophesied during a specific king's reign. And then you could read the prophetic book that aligns with that time period. And then that would give you more context for understanding what the prophets were talking about and why. So as you may remember, Saul was the first king of Israel, but he was rejected by God, and God raised up David in his place. David ruled over a united kingdom, which he passed on to Solomon. Unfortunately, Solomon fell prey to the temptations that power often presents. He built up his military, he accumulated both possessions and wives, and all of that was prohibited in Deuteronomy. At the end of Solomon's reign, the kingdom split in two, with Rehoboam reigning in Judah and Jeroboam reigning in Israel. So these are the first two kings you've got on your chart. Now, as you can see, you go way down and you'll see that Habakkuk prophesied in Judah during the reign of King Jehoiakim. Now, King Manasseh, who raised, we want to go up one slide, go back a slide, there we go. So, see, do you like my thumbs up and thumbs down? It's like real simple. So, King Manasseh, who reigned from 696 to 642, had promoted the worship of Baal. But King Josiah, who reigned from 640 to 609, urged the people to worship Yahweh alone and introduced religious and political reforms that the prophet Jeremiah supported. Now, the Egyptians came and conquered Judah, and they controlled Judah from 609 to 605. And the Egyptian king installed Jehoiakim as his puppet king in Judah. Jehoiakim rejected Josiah's reforms and turned the nation back to the worship of Baal. Then, in 605 BC, the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar, who you know from the book of Daniel, he defeated the Egyptians at Carchemish, gained control of Judah, and took the first group of Hebrews into exile, including Daniel. Later, King Jehoiakim rebelled against Babylon, so in 597, the Babylonian army defeated Judah and took more captives into exile, including Ezekiel. At that time, Nebuchadnezzar installed Zedekiah as the king of Judah and brought an end to Jehoiakim's reign. So, the book of Habakkuk fits most obviously into the early part of King Jehoiakim's reign, before King Nebuchadnezzar took control of Judah, which Habakkuk predicts in chapter 1. King Jehoiakim's reign is described in Habakkuk 1, but also in 2 Kings 23 and 24, in 2 Chronicles 36, and in sections of Jeremiah, which outline how Jehoiakim was persecuting Jeremiah. So both 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles say that King Jehoiakim did evil in the eyes of the Lord, that he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and 2 Chronicles 36 says that Jehoiakim did detestable things. So this is the religious and political context to which Habakkuk was speaking. He was speaking out against a puppet king of the Egyptians who promoted the worship of Baal, who was violent and destructive, and was seen as being wicked and detestable. So, with that context, let's read Habakkuk 1. It's on page 863, and we're going to focus on the first four verses this morning. Verse 1, the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. So these first four verses make up the first of two complaints that Habakkuk presents to God in the book of Habakkuk. I want to focus just on these four verses and how they might speak to us today. The New International Version, which is the translation in your Pew Bible, translates the first verse, the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. Now the Hebrew word that this translation renders prophecy is masah. Masah has two meanings. The most common meaning is load or burden, something that you would physically carry. While the second, less common meaning is pronouncement, or as the NIV has rendered it here, prophecy. Now, translators have the difficult task of taking words from a source language, in this case Hebrew, and representing those words in the target language, in this case English. This becomes particularly difficult in poetic texts because poetic texts often play with words in ways that prose texts do not. So the first verse of the book of Habakkuk is a title indicating that this is a prophecy that Habakkuk received from God, and therefore prophecy is an appropriate translation. At the same time, it's entirely likely that Habakkuk chose the word masah to indicate that this prophecy was also a burden to him. The use of masah in the first verse is a play on words. This prophecy, this pronouncement that God has given him is a burden for Habakkuk to bear. And as we read on, we understand why. Habakkuk begins his complaint with a phrase of lament. How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord, must I call out for help, but you do not listen? The word call here is no mere raising of one's voice. The normal Hebrew word for calling would be kara, which would correspond to hello, that sort of calling, just a basic, neither good nor bad calling. The word used in verse 1, though, is shewa, and it's a word used for shrieking. So, how long, O Lord, must I shriek out for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Habakkuk is bearing a burden for his people, and he senses that God is not paying attention. Turning back to the text in verse 3, the NIV reads, "Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds." So in the first line of verse 3, Habakkuk indicates that God has caused him to witness injustice. The NIV translates the second line, "Why do you tolerate wrongdoing?" But a more literal translation is, "Why do you watch wrongdoing?" with the implication of, "Why are you just watching and not doing anything?" Habakkuk feels that God is not only forcing Habakkuk to bear witness to injustice, but that God too is bearing witness to it and standing idly by. So no wonder Habakkuk finds it burdensome. Habakkuk knows that God desires justice and mercy, and Habakkuk believes that God has the power to punish wrongdoing, and he's distressed both by God's inaction and by the trauma of acting as God's witness. Habakkuk knows God is good, and that is why he is vexed by God's apparent inaction in his present circumstances. Turning to verse 4, we read, "Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted." Throughout this first complaint, Habakkuk is deeply concerned with justice. He mentions it twice in this verse. And a more literal translation of the verse would read, "Therefore the law, Torah, grows cold, and justice never goes forth. Indeed, the wicked surround the righteous, therefore twisted justice," or crooked justice, "goes forth." So what Habakkuk is really saying here is that proper justice, Torah justice, is not being carried out. Instead, what comes out is a perversion of justice, a twisted or crooked justice, which is no justice at all. And that brings us to the end of Habakkuk's first complaint. We know that Habakkuk has received a burdensome prophecy from God. Habakkuk is bearing the burden of acting as a witness to rampant injustice and violence. This injustice and violence is being carried out by King Jehoiakim, who is promoting idolatry. The king of Judah, who ought to be promoting Torah justice, as recorded in God's law, is sending forth crooked justice, and the righteous are surrounded by the wicked. The situation is burdensome to Habakkuk because Habakkuk's understanding of God's character is at odds with Habakkuk's experience. Habakkuk knows that the Lord is the God who hears the cry of the oppressed. This is the God who delivered Israel out of Egypt when they were slaves. This is the God who led them in the wilderness and brought them to the promised land. This is the God who takes up the cause of the orphan and the widow. This is the God who makes his expectations known in the law and has given the Israelites the honor and the responsibility of being a blessing to all nations. At the same time, this is the God who is failing to intervene in the face of rampant violence and injustice. This is the God who seems to be turning a deaf ear to Habakkuk's shrieks and desperate cries for help. God's patience with the wicked is infuriating. We worship an all-powerful God. And when we see gross injustice and violence that is perpetrated all around the world, we wonder what God is doing. But friends, we must keep on looking. Like Habakkuk, we must turn our face towards these hurts, these evils, these miscarriages of justice, the brokenness that surrounds us, and we must cry out to God. We must bear witness to destruction and violence, to strife and conflict, to illness and injustice, and bring our how long to God. God is reconciling the world to God's self through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. And in order to be God's instruments of reconciliation, God's peacemakers, God's holy and righteous priesthood, we must allow God to direct our eyes, to bring our attention the specific burdens that God wants us to bear. The brokenness that God directs our eyes to may be something as big as an international conflict or as apparently small as a friend's struggling marriage. God may be directing your eyes to cry out on behalf of the persecuted church or on behalf of someone you know personally who is facing conflict in their family or their workplace. Be it big or small, let us allow God to open our eyes. Let us allow God to direct our attention to the pains of this world. And instead of turning away in despair or in apathy, let us lift up our how long to God. Jesus calls us, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." God is calling us to bear witness to the brokenness of our world. God is calling us to bring our lamenting, our petitions, our protest, our how long to God. Jesus is sending us like lambs amongst wolves, but Jesus is also offering to bear this burden with us. May he open our eyes and hearts to see, bear witness to, and intercede for this world which he is reconciling to himself.